This is God and Autobiography, the podcast, a dramatic adaptation and continuing discussion of the book, God and Autobiography as Told to a Philosopher, by Jerry L. Martin. He was a lifelong agnostic, but one day he had an occasion to pray. To his vast surprise, God answered in words. Being a philosopher, he had a lot of questions, and God had a lot to tell him. Episode 46. Hello, I'm Scott Langdon, creative director of God and Autobiography, the podcast. Welcome to episode 46 and part one of my interview with the author of the book, God and Autobiography as Told to a Philosopher, Dr. Jerry Martin. In this first episode of our fourth season, we bring you part one of the discussion I had with Jerry just a few days ago, right after we completed the dramatic adaptation of the book in episode 44. I ask Jerry about writing God and Autobiography as Told to a Philosopher, and how falling in love with his wife, Abigail, prepared him somewhat for God's encounter with him. So, without any further ado, let's get to part one of my interview with Dr. Jerry Martin.
Hello, Jerry Martin.
I'm Scott Langdon.
It's great to talk to you. I have been looking forward to this interview for a really long time, mainly because, you know, I play the character of Jerry Martin in this podcast, God and Autobiography, the podcast based on your book, God and Autobiography as Told to a Philosopher. And that's you, the philosopher. And when I was preparing this, there were a lot of really interesting things about playing a character that's still alive. I've played real people before, you know, but having someone still alive and having working on the project with them along, you know, alongside and getting the info. And I thought a lot about what kind of questions do I want to ask you during the course of the project and getting involved in the project, and what kind of things do I not want to know? So that I can kind of fill them in myself, just not you know, intimate details as much as just sort of, you know, your opinion on certain things and your take on things. So I really wanted to draw a lot of that from the book that I think you really, you know, lay it out really well. But in preparing this interview, I decided I wanted to go with my best Terry Gross from, you know, NPR, and ask you my Terry Gross question, which is, how did you come to write God and Autobiography as Told to a Philosopher? How did it, I have to write this. How did that happen?
Well, I was told to write it and resisted the project. I did not accept it readily, but as, you know, chapter one, episode one talks about when God first speaks to me, and then God continued to and speak to me and then give me assignments, including to read the great scriptures, the ancient scriptures of the world, and to pray about them, just ask what questions came to my mind. And I thought God was preparing me maybe for writing a book, my own book, which would be a sort of standard, you know, philosophy of religion type book. But it became clear that I finally started taking notes that these very transcripts of my conversations with God were supposed to be the substance of the book. Mm-hmm. And it was, I'll tell you, the difficult thing as a writer, you're talking about some of the experience as an actor. Here, an experience as a writer, normally, when I've written anything, I've known why I'm writing it in the sense of for what audience and what I'm trying to achieve. Am I trying to entertain them or persuade them of something, inform them about background in something? In this case, it was very puzzling to me. What is this for? Who is it for? What is it for? And that slowly emerges. I got some answers early on, slowly emerges. But after resisting for a considerable period of time, I said, oh, okay, I'll do it. And I pulled the prayers together and put it together and into a coherent book form. The prayers were scattered all over in scraps of paper. I had to pull it all together, make it sequential. And hence the book unfolded from that.
Mm-hmm. When you, so you had a lot of these conversations and dialogues and in different forms, you just mentioned having them as scrap of paper here or there.
Yes.
When you were putting them together in this coherent form that is the book, you know, we've talked before about there's a larger volume even than the one that is the book that's gotten cut down even to the book. So as you're preparing the book and sort of the order and the structure and how it worked, did you feel a divine guidance through that as well? So the conversations were this divine guidance, but then putting those scraps of paper in some order, did you feel an order in a divine way?
I did. On the whole, I tried to be chronological.
Okay.
And the topics in chronological order, and within a topic, those, and although I went back and forth in prayers, but I try to hew to that order. And I did date my notes, thankfully. But I know I was told to put the Chinese first. And that seemed to be very counterintuitive, to go early on in the book to the Chinese. And so we go through Confucius and Tao Te Ching and so on. And I thought, and the substantial parts on Jesus are toward the end. And that was under guidance, you know. So I pray as I go along. It's how I live my life now. The big revelations, you might say, stopped at a certain point, surprising to me. I was ready to, I had a lot more questions, you know.
No,
interview's over. And, but anyway, I prayed as I went along. And, you know, I've wondered about the making of these great texts, the Mahabharata, the Bible, and so forth. They always talk in the case of the Bible, the great redactor. And in fact, at some point I prayed, was the redactor also inspired? You know, there are these bits of script of proto scripture that he was dealing with in ancient, was dealing with in ancient times, and then had to put them together and often save competing versions. And what I received was, that too is done under guidance or inspiration, however it works for that individual, and that would presumably apply across the board to the Tao Te Ching or the I Ching or the Mahabharata or the Upanishads, you know, wasn't a one-day thing, that these revelations were zapped out to people, but it was an unfolding, including editing, putting a volume together. Most of us growing up as a Baptist, nobody thought about how did the Bible exactly come about? How are these books put together? Well, the scholars all have a big story about that. And so anyway, you need, from my view, divine guidance at each step of the way in both your religious activities and just living your life.
You and the book jacket just spells this right out. And we use this in the opening of every podcast introduction. We talk about how you were an agnostic.
Yes.
And what I've been curious about is why an agnostic and why not full on atheist?
Atheism. Fast. Atheism has never had appeal to me. It seemed like an overstatement. It's hard to know that there is a God. It would be at least as hard to know that there's not a God. It would be as if you had an inventory of everything in the universe and you look you look down to the G's, God, nope, no God entry here. You know, how would you know that? So it seems kind of dogmatic. And when you look at the atheist writings, which I've not done a lot of, but what you see is they're objecting to one conception of God, mm-hmm. normally. And as biblical, it's often a kind of crude interpretation of a biblical God. Mm-hmm. And this, the scholars in these fields, you know, slap their foreheads because the understanding of those texts is so meager in the hands of the so-called new atheists, they're often called. Mm-hmm. But no, I never had, I'm by nature, this would be the kind of fundamental answer why I was an agnostic. By nature, I'm someone cautious in my commitments and don't rapidly make judgments. Some people are prone to snap judgments, and I'm not. I always feel, oh, there's more evidence. You know, there are arguments on both sides of almost any interesting question. And mm-hmm. often there's simply not enough evidence really to make a definitive decision. And so I tend to withhold belief. And that's been both an asset and a deficit and a negative in my God adventure and in putting this book out there. Because I do believe this is God speaking to me.
When we first joined forces, as it were,
yes.
You know, you had put out an ad on Craigslist that I answered, and we got together, and I wasn't exactly sure what I was going to be getting into, and you know, when we met, and you told me your story at your home with Abigail there, it was one that was, and we talk about this, other times that it was, well, here's somebody who has said God talked to them.
Yes.
And one of two things with that, Scott, yeah. I would say to myself. So you could either just, okay, he's crazy and that's it. Or, but what if it's true? And if it is true, let's go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. Let's see what find.
Happens. Right.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, at what point, or if there was a point, did you kind of have a similar situation with this where, and we talk about this on the podcast, taking it right from the book where Abigail, you know, kind of questions you, are you going to take this voice seriously or aren't
yes.
you? And you go through a nice period of time where you say, I'm not sure what to do. Sometimes I listen, sometimes I'm not sure. And then, but then at one point it must've been, you said, okay, I'm going to do this and just go full bore. For me, it was, this seems interesting. Why not?
Yes.
Did you have a similar sort of thing? Cause you seem to be, as you just mentioned, quite cautious about your commitments. And so this was going to be obviously a huge commitment.
Yes,
the cautiousness must have been there. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a philosopher. You know, how did Socrates get into trouble such that they convicted him and gave him poison to take? it was by questioning everything. And so mm-hmm. he was accused of impiety. We won't go more into his story, but philosophers are questioners. And they're almost, doubt is one of their main modes of operation. How do you know that's true? Where did you get that concept? And that's my mentality. I'm a natural epistemologist, which is mm-hmm. translated theory of knowledge. But the theory of knowledge is mainly theory of, do you have any knowledge? And how do you have it? You know, how do you know it when you've got some knowledge? So it's very natural for me to doubt. It's so unusual in experience. Within the experience, there's no doubt. And I found that very puzzling because I've never believed in certainty in my philosophy. Some people think mathematics is certain. Well, maybe it's certain with the perfect mathematician, but it's not certain with you and me. We can make mistakes. And so can the guy at the Institute for Advanced Study can make mistakes. And some think there's a level of sensory experience. You can't be doubt that you're in pain. If you're in pain, you're certain that you're in pain. I've never thought that was for various reasons. People can miscategorize their own experiences also. So I didn't believe in certainty. And yet within this experience, it was undeniable, as I've always put it, well, as I put it in the book, put it at the beginning and continue to, God was too real, authoritative, and benign to doubt, and to doubt really. But step one inch outside my skin, and I look at myself, you know, as an epistemologist or and a 20th first century person, and I kind of want to say, you crazy?
Right.
So, of course, I had that problem, and I talked to several people about it, and they were very helpful. And then read some of the literature. I found I called a friend who's a dean at Calvin College, which is a very religious, kind of Dutch Reformed institution. But I knew this guy was religious and but also a very smart philosopher. I called and asked him, is there any way, if you think you hear God, is there any literature on whether you really did feel hear the voice of God? Did you was this really God? And oh yes, he told me. That's the problem of spiritual discernment. There's a whole category and a long literature, and the most famous, perhaps, in the Christian tradition is Saint Ignatius. I'm now forgetting the exact title of his book, but Saint Ignatius goes into this in depth. He is the founder of the Jesuits. He goes into this with depth, and I read him and some more recent theological writing, and I could really track my own experience, and I could see what the pitfalls are, and I could also kind of check off, well, I didn't seem to fall into them. So one of the main pitfalls, for example, is if you suddenly get extremely arrogant and you think, oh, I'm the Lord's anointed, so I get to go boss everybody else around, tell them what to believe, and establish, you know, who knows, a theocratic regime with me at the top, you know, and that's about the, and you often see of the spiritual leaders we credit most, they're often praised for their humility. And they're the opposite of, oh, I'm everything. I'm the big boss. I'm the oracle. They're just, and I prayed, what is my role? Just to be a serious reporter of what you're told when you pray. It's not to found a religion. It's not to do this, that, not to be an evangelist of some kind. Just be a serious reporter of what you're told when you pray. And I thought, oh, well, that's something I can do.
You know. Yeah. You know, when we started doing this podcast, neither of us really kind of knew where this would go, how it would turn out, you know, if this was the right thing to do. But we pretty quickly kind of got into a groove and kind of figured what our sound was going to be like, what the tone of everything was going to be and how we would sort of handle it. And when we first started putting this together, and I started reading the book, and I thought it was, you know, dramatic, and thought it could really, you know, use some treatment. And we talked about having you be the voice of God because you had heard the voice, and it would be, you know, a closer sort of authentic read, perhaps, to have you do it. And so I take the role of you talking to God, so Jerry Martin, and also the narrator, which in our scripts back and forth as we were developing this, we named that narrator character JLM.
Yes.
And at JLM throughout the course of the book, and then as the podcast, the narrator, so that you kind of tell in the story of what's going on with you, you talk about how you were led to read certain things.
Yes.
At one point in the book, you talk about a situation at Borders Bookstore where you literally feel like you were being led like a dowser with a stick into a certain John Calvin. Yeah.
Yes.
But throughout, that was your, that was sort of your wheel. We've talked about this too, that was your wheelhouse, that your wheelhouse was reading and philosophy, and so yes. God directing you to read these certain things. And when I was preparing this, I'm more apt to take in things auditorially and watch videos. And I felt as I was preparing and reading your example and talking to you about how you had been led to read certain things, I started thinking, well, maybe I'm being led to listen to certain things and watch certain things. And when I sort of gave into that, this whole other sort of world of knowledge started opening up to me in a way that was like, I wasn't seeking knowledge and found it. It was just sort of like I was sitting on this track and being guided just to the right knowledge. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this, you know, I would listen to something on, we talked about the I Ching and the, you know, the Chinese, and I would be led to listen to something and study something. And then it turned out our next episode was going to end up being about the I Ching.
Yes,
and the doubt. It just sort of flowed, and I was ready to meet that challenge. And I started to feel that I was on this sort of track. So as you were being led, how did that feel for you initially to read things and to be led in your Fach, in your genre, if you will?
Well, for me, those were the comfortable parts, because that is close to what I do as an academic, you know, as a scholar. And I was uncomfortable with the unscholarly aspect of it, because I was reading everything in translation and for the first time. And so I thought, from a scholarly point of view, you know, I must have the most simplistic understanding of all, and God is responding to the questions as I frame them. And I'm told some of the earlier answers weren't as good. I'm told by God some of the earlier back and forth was not as good as later, maybe because I was finding my way. But just being told to go read something, I would sometimes be surprised. The Indian epic Mahabharata, which is not officially in their most sacred text, it's kind of a collateral thing. It's an epic, sort of like the Iliad. So I was sometimes surprised, and then led in careful line-by-line way on I Ching, which I had tried once and kind of dismissed, you know, had no need for it, you might say. And then it was sometimes I would, you know, get all interested in something, and we pray about it some, and then God would say, okay, that's enough. Some other thing, just as I had kind of prepped myself, gotten some books, you know. So that was the uncomfortable part for a scholar, was skirting along, reading things for the first time. And the first time I talked about any of this to a group, a young Asian, a woman who's Asian studying in America, raised her hand. And with first question, I thought, oh no, I've asked stupid questions about the Chinese and she's going to blast me. What she said, in fact, was, I am so glad to hear this. And it was that there's divine truth in multiple traditions. Well, I won't go on with her story, but she valued the tradition she grew up in, as well as she was studying at Catholic University of America. She valued, of course, the religion to which she had converted, but she did not like the tendency they had to try to push her away from her family. And she said, I value the wisdom of my elders, and that there can be divine truth in their tradition as well. You know, what a relief. What a relief.
That is a relief. And I imagine to somebody who's going through a circumstance like that, that would be a big breath of fresh air.
Yes. And there's so many people now who are transplanted from one culture to another, and some who are having a conversion experience of one kind or another, or these people who participate in, there are a lot of Jews practice Buddhist meditation, for example. A lot of everybody practices some of these Eastern techniques, right? And it's nice to, if the divine comes through to you through your meditation practice, through yoga, fine. That doesn't have to be in competition with something else you believe.
Right, right.
You know, they can all be true.
Thank you for listening to God and Autobiography, the podcast. Subscribe for free today wherever you listen to your podcasts and hear a new episode every week. You can hear the complete dramatic adaptation of God and Autobiography as Told to a Philosopher by Jerry L. Martin by beginning with episode 1 of our podcast and listening through its conclusion with episode 44. You can read the original true story in the book from which this podcast is adapted, God and Autobiography as Told to a Philosopher, available now at Amazon.com and always at godandautobiography.com. Pick up your own copy today.